Let's go to Dave Lundy. Dave Lundy joins us. Dave Lundy, of course, one half of the Touche crew. That's Monday nights here, and also a political consultant and strategist here in Chicago. Dave, what'd you think of the speech and how the president gave the information, but then also about this strike that is happening tonight against Syria?
Well, I thought the speech itself was fine. And as I said on Monday's show, I would fully support a strike on Syria. I'm trying to read through the news because he didn't say anything about what they did. He just said that we launched strikes. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to see exactly what we did. I think it's important to understand the magnitude of these strikes. If it's something similar to what he did a year ago, I think that's kind of pointless. But I'm more intrigued, frankly, Justin, by the timing of this. You know, there was a story earlier this evening. It was just 3 hours ago that it turns out that the Steele dossier that said that Michael Cohen was in Prague was correct. That the Mueller's team has found evidence that, contrary to what Michael Cohen said, that he in fact was in Prague, potentially meeting with Russians.
So you feel wagged a dog on this one.
Man, I hate to make the accusation because we did this in consult with Britain and France, so it's entirely possible it's coincidental. But this was without question the single biggest development in the Russia probe in the entire time. So the fact that it happened on exactly the same night, I'm call me dubious. But that said, I fully support, and as I said on Monday night, I haven't changed my position. I fully support attacking Syria. I fully support extracting some measure of justice for the chemical attacks. And I thought the speech itself was fine.
Yeah, I guess the question I have beyond the coincidence and the conspiracy theory is when the speech is and it seemed like the speech was really foreshadowing what might be the retaliation to the retaliation, talking to Russia specifically, calling out Russia and saying you're on the wrong side on this, you need to come on our side. Usually when you're in these kind of situations where you're going to attack a country and there's politics involved, you say what you're doing, you say why you're doing it, and you get out. This idea of this call to Russia in this speech, how do you take that?
You know, I didn't have a problem with that. I didn't have a problem with calling on Russia and Iran to, you know, behave responsibly. I mean, it's going to fall on deaf ears, but I didn't have a problem with it. Although, interestingly, it struck my son Eli, my 12-year-old son Eli, like, oh, sure, he's talking about Russia as if he's a tough guy on Russia the same day he's getting attacked for what happened with Russia. So again, even Eli recognized the wag the dog quality of the timing. But now, look, the reality is the United States, in concert with our allies, we had both a right to respond and it was appropriate to respond. I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with the fact that we didn't have to do this in concert with the UN because Russia has a veto, so they would prevent that. I thought it's the right thing to do. I just, am curious about the timing. And again, I want to see what really happened here.
Yeah. Dave Lundy joins us every Monday here in Touche as well as on Patty Vasquez's show. Dave, thanks for joining us, man. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. And I will be on Patty later tonight.
All right. We'll be listening. Let's bring in the other half of Touche, Chris Roebling, who's on the line as well. Watch the speech. Chris, what's your first take after the speech tonight and the attack, the strike on Syria?
I want to say I missed the speech. I've been watching the coverage since and reading up. I think that I heard the back end of David's comment. Number one, this seems to be a measured response focused on the chemical weapon capability in Syria with precision-guided weapons. Number two, this is a joint response, apparently, with both the UK and France, being the longtime, post-colonial dominant power behind Syria, and so very, very significant in the entire Syrian equation. I would say number three, this is a case where the timing, notwithstanding Dave's political points, the timing really isn't in the hands of President Trump, the timing is in the hands of the military. Once we know, once we had confirmation, and apparently we do have confirmation, as does France and as does the UK, of Syrian government responsibility for the Douma attack with chlorine or sarin or chlorine and sarin. So, you know, we heard that the Syrian Air Force was redeploying to mix itself up with the Russian Air Force, which would make it harder for us to take out the Syrian Air Force and not blow up part of the Russian Air Force. And, you know, that's not something we don't want to get into a direct conflict with Russia. So we had to act quickly. The fact that we're acting with our major allies only speaks to the horror that was experienced by their people 100 years ago in 1918 and 1919 in World War One. And of course, you know, we can also talk about the failure of the so-called arms control regime to get these weapons out of Syria. As we had been promised that they were out, they're not out. They're still being used, and it's a quandary.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Chris. You know, obviously, the president mentioned in the speech that they had gone to much lengths to rebuild friendships in the Middle East, and the Middle East is on board. When you talk about Syria and what's happening there and all the players, that everyone from Russia to Iran to the United States and everyone and all the allied forces that are there, particularly, where is this, the Middle East? Where are countries like Saudi Arabia? Where are countries like Iran and Iraq? Are they on the sidelines in this conflict? Or are they in the thick of it?
Well, for one thing, I'm going to Saudi Arabia in the next 10 days or so for a week or two, and I'll have a better idea then. But the Emir of Qatar was at the White House, I think, day before yesterday for an hour or so, and has, you know, personally wept for the damage done to Syrian people in this civil war. The Sunni powers are distinct from Assad, who is not a Sunni, not a Shia. He's in a different group of Muslims, and the Sunni powers have been very anti-Assad and pro-rebellion. But as you know, identifying the right group inside the rebellion was something I don't think anybody could do. I don't fault Obama on that. Or I think McCain does. I don't. You know, you cannot know exactly who's right to rebel against Bashar Assad, son of Hafez al-Assad, who himself was a self-styled Air Force officer inspired by Gamal Abdel Nasser in the late 50s and early 60s. And said, I'm going to do in Syria what Nasser's going to do there. In fact, at one point, Syria was united, believe it or not, with Egypt under Nasser. That didn't last very long, but it's an important brief chapter in the history. Anyway, so the others, Jordan, the UAE, Oman, Qatar, Saudi, and Bahrain, and Iraq, you know, they all want peace in Syria, and they would love to see Assad gone. And they would love to see Iran back in Iran and not in Syria. And I think probably to a country, up to and including Israel, to a country, they don't want Russia in the Middle East. And the whole Russian dimension here has just taken things to a complexity, a power of nine or a power of ten.
Reuters is reporting that there were explosions in Damascus, and we'll find out more about that coming up here in the news, but also as it unfolds. I just want to get that out there. And also, I want to ask, because there, you know, as you break down the different countries and where they stand in this, and of course, the big players, one country that may not be as big of a player politically, but seems to have a lot at stake is the country of Turkey. Turkey seems to be right there, not mentioned necessarily, and also has a sordid current political back and forth with the United States of America and that area. What role does Turkey play when we talk about Syria and what might play out in the next decade?
You know, Turkey is in a period of transition, and it's not a particularly welcome transition. And its relations with the region, I think, are pretty darn strong. But you have in Recep Erdogan a would-be Islamic Republic leader, and that's flying in the face of, you know, Ataturk's secular Turkish state, which followed on the end of the Ottoman Empire. So Erdogan is a little bit of a free radical, not wedded to the secular Turkey that we knew for 60 years, and exploring relations with Iran. And also, and this goes back, you know, all of these relationships go back hundreds, if not thousands of years. You know, the Turks and the Persians have been at it for thousands of years. Turks and the Russians only for about 600 or 800 years. But, you know, Turkey has its own love-hate relationship with Russia, okay? And so I think that you're right to ask about Turkey, and I would say that Turkey would gladly see the fall of Assad and a new Syrian regime, just like Obama, just like you and me and Dave. None of us know what that new regime would look like, and so everybody gets stuck in, we'd rather probably stay with Assad as bad as he is than force the issue, wipe him out, and then make the Russians persona non grata, hopefully kick out ISIS forever and Iran once and for all, because none of us can appropriately or can accurately describe what's the next regime going to look like. Unless you've been working on that since lunch.
Possible.
You know. No, I mean, this is terrible. And I saw this, I see the reports now about the flashing in the sky of Damascus. And, you know, our hearts have to go out to the people of Syria, 99.99% of whom have nothing to do with any of this power politics. They're all trying to scrape by with a living. They care about their kids. They care about, you know, diapers. They care about wipes. They care about, you know, bottled water. You know, Justin, they're exactly like we are. And all of this is being done to them, around them. Very few of them are actors in this drama. The rebels, certainly, but many, many regular people are just living in fear and terror and violence and random, you know, explosions. It's hellish.
Yeah. Chris Roebling, of course, joins us every Monday on Touche. Also a Republican political strategist and consultant here in town. Chris, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
Charles Lipson, professor of international politics at the University of Chicago, columnist for Real Clear Politics, and the author of the blog ZipDialogue.com. He's a frequent guest here on WGN and The Download. Professor Lipson, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. When you had me on, it reminded me of being at a TV station in Chicago a year or two ago, and one of the anchors said to me, "It's good to see you." And I said, "You know, it's really not good to see me. When you see me, it's almost never that something good in the world happened."
Well, let's talk about this, because this was something that many felt was coming. This was not something that was disputed. There wasn't a lot of political discord one way or the other about what could be retaliation for chemical weapons attacks. Tonight, airstrikes. Are you surprised at any of the of what we're seeing on the television, and that the president has moved forward in these strikes?
No, I'm not. Let me make a few points about it. The first is that last April, a year ago, we fired 59 Tomahawk missiles at a Syrian air base that had been used for a chemical attack. I think that means, especially after President Trump tweeted that this was unacceptable and telegraphed it in other ways, that we had to do something, and I think it will have to be larger than 59 Tomahawk missiles, lest it deter. And in fact, Nikki Haley has said that the Syrians have used chemical gas at least 50 times, and I've heard estimates of up to 200. Mm. It's also important, I think, over the last few days that President Trump has said, has named not only Russia and Iran, but named Putin specifically as being implicated in these dastardly attacks on innocent civilians. The Russians have responded like the old Soviet Union, saying that the attacks didn't even happen. Like the old joke about the lawyer, you weren't bitten by a dog, it wasn't my dog, it wasn't a bad bite.
Right.
I think this is quite serious. I would say one more thing, which is the air defenses in Syria are all supplied by Iran and paid for by Iran, but they're Russian air defenses. And that may be one reason. I mean, the worst things that could happen would be things like an American plane shot down by Russian equipment manned by the Iranians, or a Russian ship, which is apparently tailing one of our ships out in the Mediterranean, doing something to strike us directly. More likely would be an accident or an unintended consequence where we hit a base that had a lot of Russians present, and Putin felt like he wanted to respond to that in a military way. That would be a very serious matter indeed.
You've seen the escalation of words, both from the Russian government, Putin, and the United States, of course, President Trump, social media, mm-hmm. and press and other places, where even Russian leaders coming out earlier this week saying, hey, if you attack, if you do this, then we may be forced to attack U.S. military. We've also seen tonight the speech that the president made, where he personally talked to Russia, saying that this is your chance right now. You're on the wrong side. What are the risks and the calculations that go into this kind of thing when there's so much political rhetoric that's happening between two superpowers?
And I've heard Russian experts say that the relations between Washington and Moscow haven't been worse since the Cuban Missile Crisis. I would say that that's probably accurate. I would also say that Putin is playing an extremely weak hand very well. They have an economy the size of Italy. I don't know how it compares to California, but it's not. It's one-fifth the size of the United States, and they are badly overstretched. Yes, they've gotten a base on the Mediterranean, and yes, they've gotten more influence in Iran and so forth, but I don't exactly see how that's helping them other than to give them bragging rights. Putin won't want to be seen as backing down, that's for sure. But I think the real risk is that there would be direct engagement in a relatively high-profile way that would force one side or the other to respond.
For you, as someone who's watched international politics and seen this played out before with different presidents and different administrations, what do you make of the way that the relations between the two superpowers and our relations in the Middle East are playing out?
I think that a lot of what President Trump is doing is undoing the damage of the last two previous administrations. George W. Bush overthrew the regime in Iraq without having a way or a plan to set up a replacement regime. President Obama withdrew forces leaving the Sunnis throughout the region to the tender mercies of Iran, who he was edging closer to for the nuclear deal that opened the space for ISIS to come in. He also telegraphed that we would be leaving the area. Trump does not seem to have any plan for what to do in Iraq for Syria. Not that it would be easy to devise one, but it's important to recognize that what he's doing here is a tactical strike intended to send a message that you cannot use chemical weapons on civilians, but it has nothing to do with who's going to end up controlling Syria. And in fact, Trump said, we don't intend regime change.
Right. Charles Lipson is a professor of international politics at the University of Chicago. He's also a columnist for Real Clear Politics and the author of the blog ZipDialogue.com. He's a frequent guest here on WGN and The Download. And when I do have you on, we'll talk about, you know, you help me better understand the world that we live in, especially in the region of the Middle East. I have a curious question. It may be one that has an easy answer, but where's Israel in this? You know, the coalition, of course, with the French and the UK tonight, but Israeli forces not included. Why?
First of all, I'm just back from Israel, and I talked to people there. I'll be going again in the summer, and I try to talk with people who are experts across the Middle East. I'm not a Middle East expert, but I am a specialist in international politics and these kinds of issues more generally. You wouldn't want to hit Syria with Israel. The Israelis don't want to be directly involved, and the Americans don't want the Israelis involved for a couple of reasons. The Americans want to show that there is a global alliance of civilized countries against this sort of thing. And by bringing in the French and the English, although not, I would note, the Germans, they are sending a message to Putin that sanctions could be coming and that there will be a price to pay for this. The Israelis' interest, the Americans wouldn't want to bring them in unless they absolutely needed them, because it would only rile up that particular cleavage in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. The Israelis have tried very hard to avoid becoming involved in the Syrian civil war, but they do have one crucial interest there. They do not want the Iranians, who now have the Syrian government as a client, they don't want the Iranians to set up their forces right on Israel's border. I was on that border a couple of weeks ago. I mean, you're 30 miles from Damascus. You could put Iranian forces there, and they would literally be within minutes of striking all the population centers in Israel. So what Israel is trying to do is keep the Iranians back from the border without becoming more deeply involved in the civil war, and I think that the Americans understand that. The Israelis also have relatively good relationships with the Russians, in no small part because there are quite a few Russians who migrated from the old Soviet Union to Israel and have become prominent there, and those lines of communication are open, so the Israelis don't want to hit the Russian bases either.
Yeah. Charles, I'm also interested, you know, as we look at what's going to happen, and the Pentagon is going to brief, they're going to have a briefing at 10 o'clock Eastern, which will be 9 o'clock in just a couple minutes here, about 10 minutes. We'll have a better understanding of what the scope is of this strike, this coordinated attack against Syria tonight, the United States, the French, and the British. You know, as you mentioned, the Germans were not involved in this, and you also talk about the Russians who have taken old Soviet Union styles of denying that anything even happened in the first place. When this happens and this kind of thing, Assad has proven already that 59 missiles went into Syria last year, and there still are chemical weapons and attacks. Will this be effective? Will this be the kind of thing that at least stops Assad from using those chemical weapons in the continuing civil war that's happening in Syria?
Well, as our president says, we shall see. Remember, by the way, that John Kerry and Barack Obama negotiated with the Russians, and the Russians said they pulled all the chemical weapons out.
Right.
So it's not as if we're just taking Bashar al-Assad's words. The Russians committed to doing all of this. I think that the next big question is whether the United States wants to do something that would provide a safe haven for the people in the country who would like to flee from these war zones. But that would also be extremely dangerous, costly, and all the rest. We haven't mentioned one country that's involved in a lot of this, and that's Turkey. Turkey is a NATO ally, but it is not happy to see Kurds fighting in Syria or in Iraq, because they view those Kurds as a threat to their own government. So this is very complex. And I think one of the things, if you want to step back and look at a kind of bigger picture, I think what you're seeing is a kind of arc being established across the underbelly of Asia, going from Lebanon and Syria, which are Iranian clients, through Iran to Afghanistan, or at least the parts of Afghanistan that are under Taliban control, Pakistan, China, and North Korea. That's forming as a kind of anti-American, anti-Western alliance. And I think what you're seeing on the other side is that China is increasingly surrounded by countries that are fearful of China's expansion into the South China Sea, and that goes all the way from South Korea to India. And then you're seeing Europe trying to figure out if they really want to tighten up and become part of a renovated NATO, which now, many years after the end of the Soviet Union, looks as if it has an enemy again.
It's so complicated. Of course, what's happened in Syria in the last decade and the civil war that's happened there, and even the president tonight in his speech talking about ISIS and eradicating ISIS, and how really ISIS plays a big role, because for people who are not familiar with what's happened in Syria, Assad is essentially the government there. There is a rebel force that wants to take out Assad, and ISIS has grouped in with the rebel force, in some ways using the rebel force for their own intentions. And because of that, you have a lot of different players at different places that are vying for power. You know, with the United States, and of course, Assad makes it a clear case, you cannot use chemical weapons in 2018 in a civilized world. But it's still not clear at the end of the day who's on what side, because of all of the complications, especially when you're dealing with the ISIS, the terrorist network that's ISIS. There's a lot still that has to shake out.
You are so right, Justin. It requires Abbott and Costello's who's on first routine.
It really does. So even with this case, I mean, for people who are maybe getting into this Syrian story now, because of course what's happening with the strikes that were ordered tonight against, and it looks like it might have been in Damascus, then Pentagon's about to tell us what the strikes were. But people who are entering this, I need to recognize, because politicians on both sides of the aisles may try to simplify it for manipulation, there is a lot of complication to the story, and there continues to be.
You're absolutely right. I think that the first question will be, will this escalate in the short term? And that will depend upon whether we have inadvertently crossed some line for Putin. Of course, the Iranians could try to strike back independently, but we'd be quite willing to go after them. Going after Russia is a different matter. It's a major nuclear armed country with a lot of resources, even if it has a weak economy. I think the second question over the medium run is, what happens if this doesn't work? What happens if 3 months from now, 5 months from now, we see another chemical attack like this? I think it would be extremely unwise for Bashar al-Assad and his backers to try something in the next week or two. But if they try something a few months from now, you can't just keep firing in a bunch of missiles and getting a bad response and expecting that. Yeah. So I think that there are, the point you raised earlier, I would summarize as this. There ain't many good options on the table here.
Right. Charles Lipson, of course, a professor of international politics at the University of Chicago, columnist for Real Clear Politics, and the author of the blog ZipDialogue.com, a frequent guest here on WG in the Download. Can't thank you enough, Professor, for taking some time out to talk to us now. We appreciate it.
And most of all, a friend of Justin's.
Thank you. Thank you. A friend of yours, Charles. Thank you very much.